This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 235 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. If you're a football fan, you probably didn't miss Antonio Brown's tweets and Instagram posts this week. The biggest one was that he called out Juju Smith-Schuster for fumbling against the Saints in a must-win game, and he did it while quote-tweeting an image that someone had sent him of Juju as Steelers MVP. Because the team voted Smith-Schuster as MVP this past year. Now, I'm not bringing this up to talk about who's right and who's wrong. I certainly have my opinion on it, but I tend to shy away from that kind of stuff on this show to keep things concise and actionable. I'm bringing it up because I got a question from @PrivateParks on Twitter this week that said, "Does off-season drama ever affect your drafts and rankings? The whole AB tweet storm has me wondering about the impact it has on his relationship with teammates and the front office." Now, I tend to think that we'll make too big of a deal out of attitude-related things. Not because they don't matter, but because we never know when they actually do matter. Sometimes a player's feelings towards a team aren't even known until after the fact. And sometimes even when we know a player is disgruntled, they still produce. Where I'll change things more is if there's some sort of looming off-the-field issue that could get a player suspended. When it has to do with feelings, it's just too hard to measure the impact. And not only that, but with the AB situation in particular, everything seems positive on the Raiders' front so far. I know his actions seem to tell us that a 180 could happen at any moment, but I probably wouldn't worry about this affecting his stats for redraft purposes. That's how I'll leave it with this Antonio Brown drama. Before we get to more questions on this mailbag show, I wanted to let you know that FanDuel's biggest baseball contest of the year is here. It's the World Fantasy Baseball Championship. If you think you have what it takes to finish at the top, head to FanDuel.com and qualify now to get a trip to the live WFBC Finals in San Diego, where you'll play for a share of $2 million. Eligibility restrictions apply. This first question is from @DynastyFF_Kyle. Who's your current rookie 101, and how far would they fall in your rankings if they land in the worst possible situation? So my current 101 is N'Keal Harry. He's got one of the more complete production and analytical profiles that we've actually seen in a while, so he's my 101. I'm definitely a believer that wide receiver talent can trump a bad situation more than running back talent, and I don't think it's that close. But there are situations for wide receivers that are far better than others. One place I don't want my favorite wide receivers to go is Baltimore. We know they were incredibly run-heavy with Lamar Jackson last year, and we know wide receivers in Baltimore suffered as a result. When Lamar Jackson took over in week 11 last year, you guys, so from week 11 through the end of the regular season, Baltimore Ravens wide receivers averaged 16.5 PPR points per game total. Before Jackson took over, that number was 38. Just for some perspective, across the entire season, Washington had the lowest PPR points per game average at wide receiver with about 23 points per contest. So Baltimore was more than 6 points worse than that with Lamar Jackson at quarterback. And 15 individual wide receivers had more points than the Ravens did as a team. So if N'Keal Harry goes to Baltimore, I know he's going to struggle to post fantasy points for at least the first year or two of his career. That all depends on how long Lamar Jackson is Baltimore's quarterback. That's going to push him back in my rankings pretty dramatically. Where I'd draft him, I have no idea. That's mostly because I'll need to know where other players land and what his ADP looks like for purposes of extracting value. But I can tell you that I don't want to draft Ravens wide receivers whatsoever. This next question is from @BillyMarshall54. Why do tight ends have such a late breakout age? So I talked about this before, but I've admittedly done a lot less work with tight ends as opposed to running backs and wide receivers. I focus a lot of my attention on backs and wideouts because they obviously mean a lot more in fantasy football. But I do think the answer to this question is that tight end is a complex position. It's why we see less of an impact from rookie tight ends too, at least compared to a position like wide receiver. Tight ends have to do more in a football field than a wide receiver does. They've got far more blocking responsibilities, but they still have to understand route running and be effective at it if they're going to be good pass catchers. So at a baseline level, that's really my guess as to why they break out later than wide receivers do, because they have to do more and learn more, and that takes time. This next question is from @FFPoolTsunami. The Godwin and Pettis hype is out of control, don't you think? How high could you see either player's ceiling in 2019? I actually got two questions that asked about Pettis and Godwin, so I figured I'd talk about it on today's mailbag. I don't really think that either player is getting hyped out of control. I think it's for good reason. Now, Godwin especially, he's locked into that number two role, and after I built my projections, he comes out right where his ADP is. As of right now, my projections have him at 76 receptions, 977 yards and about 6 touchdowns. There's nothing wrong with that. He's basically a low-end wide receiver too. Maybe some are drafting him a little bit higher than that, but I can at least understand it. I think with Pettis, we haven't seen the same type of production from him like we have with Godwin. But what we've seen is pretty damn good. And there's not a ton of competition there, at least at wide receiver. The difference with Pettis and Godwin, I think, is that San Francisco seems more likely to add a bigger piece in the draft than the Bucs will. I think the Bucs will get a wide receiver, but considering how closely the 49ers were tied to OBJ, I think it makes sense that they do go for a wideout in the earlier rounds. But Pettis is definitely a riskier player to target and have than Godwin is. Not just because we've got a larger sample of Godwin, but because San Francisco could add a better wideout in the draft. Now there's ambiguity with Pettis, and that means there's more potential for a higher ceiling. But I can understand both of their ADPs right now. This next question is an email from Steven. It says, since running back doesn't matter, can you rank the best situations for rookie running backs to get drafted to? Yeah, so the teams that I'm watching during the draft or the landing spots I'm watching for running backs would be the Chiefs number one, the Raiders, the Bears, the Texans, and the Buccaneers. Realistically, if a good running back goes to one of those teams, he could end up being fantasy relevant as soon as this year. I also think we should at least watch for the Eagles, Ravens, and Colts too. I just don't think they're as high on the list as the other teams though. And to be honest, I don't even know if some of those other teams are going to go after a back, or at least spend anything substantial on one. The Chiefs are one team that may feel good about where they're at. They might feel fine with Damian Williams and Carlos Hyde, but the Raiders and Bears definitely have holes to fill, and the Texans and Buccaneers have backs that they may be wanting to replace. So those are the landing spots to watch later this month. This next question is from @PatternCryptic. In best ball drafts that include defenses, would you prefer a defense that is considered to be strong or a defense that has an easier strength of schedule according to @SharpFootball's analysis? So that's Warren Sharp. I don't think there's necessarily a blanket answer here, but I do think that we have to look at value. Strong defenses are generally going to be more costly. The Bears are going to cost more than a random team with a good schedule. And I will rarely spend on defense. It's partially because the position is easy to replace in best ball and in fantasy in general, but also we see a good bit of turnover year over year at the position. So I guess my answer would be to look at the stuff that Warren is doing and see if you can find defensive values that way. This next question says, what do your projections say about Juju Smith-Schuster this season? Do you expect a drop-off in targets and or efficiency with the so-called tougher coverage? So on Wednesday, I wrote an article on NumberFire about a pair of prop bets that are on FanDuel's sportsbook about Juju and Antonio Brown. One being who will have more yards, and the other who will have more touchdowns. As of right now, my projection for Juju is about 110 catches, 1,363 yards, and 8.5 touchdowns. And that puts him at wide receiver 5. He's right behind DeAndre Hopkins, Julio Jones, Michael Thomas, and Davante Adams. And I honestly think that's fair. He'll see tougher coverage, but he'll see tougher coverage in the form of better personnel, not necessarily double teams. Double teams don't happen as frequently as people think. But I think Juju has room to grow from a target share standpoint. Like, my projections have him at about 26.5% of Pittsburgh's overall attempts. That can absolutely grow. The Steelers could also regress further than I expect in pass attempts, but it basically all means that Juju has a crazy ceiling. He should see a lot of volume. And for anyone who's rolling their eyes at this, ask yourself, what has Juju Smith-Schuster done at the professional level to make you think that he's not elite? He has some of the best age-adjusted production of all time. I think he's going to ball out in 2019. This next question is from @Tubaca. In PPR Dynasty, which side would you take in a trade? Antonio Brown and the 101 or Juju Smith-Schuster? I can't imagine why so many people are into Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster this week. Now, jokes aside, if you go to any trade calculator, I would almost guarantee the AB side is an easy winner here. But I don't think that's the side that I want, at least not this year. Because this year's rookie class, like I've been saying a lot on the show, it's very flat and deep. There aren't obvious studs. There's no obvious 101. If that 101 was Saquon Barkley, then the answer is obvious. But we don't have a player like that in this year's draft. Given Juju's age and upside and the ambiguity surrounding how AB is going to perform in Oakland and AB's age himself, I'm going with the Juju side here. Maybe that's surprising to some of you, but the 101 is not the same this year as it's been in years past. This next question is from @CFGamebreaker. Where would your first tier cutoff be in Dynasty rookie drafts? So the podcast before the draft starts will be one where I go through my rookie rankings. But I think a lot of that's going to change from now versus after the draft. Since things are so flat and deep, that means a lot of players can jump others once we know their landing spots. But I would say that I do have three very clear wide receivers in my top tier in this class, at least right now. Those three being N'Keal Harry, AJ Brown, and Hakeem Butler. After that, I can make the case for a lot of guys. So I'll say that's where the first tier gets cut. But that's almost definitely going to change after the draft is over. This last question is from @Desperado28. Do you consider regression when looking at touchdown market share for prospects? For example, someone like David Sills scored a touchdown on 23% of his receptions this year. I think this is a reason to look at more than just touchdown share when you're prospecting through numbers. Like, let's just use David Sills as our example. His final season touchdown share was 39.5%, which is well above average. But a model isn't just looking at touchdown share. So while he might look good there, he's getting dinged by a below average reception share and yard share. So if you have a model that involves at least those three categories, and let's say that you're looking at final season production, which you should weigh more than other seasons, then his touchdown share isn't going to make him look spectacular when it's not standing there alone. But it should also make you want to investigate further. Sills scored 15 touchdowns on 65 receptions last year, but he actually scored 18 on 60 receptions the year before. So this touchdown thing isn't as fluky as it might appear. And college is weird like that too. It's not the same type of level playing field that the NFL is, so regression doesn't hit the same way. We also don't have large sample sizes to assume regression is going to hit. So I guess my answer is that I don't care all that much since there are a ton of factors to worry about when you're prospecting with data. That's going to do it for today's show. Thanks to all of you guys for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify. And like I've been saying, if you're on iTunes, please do me a favor and leave a rating and review. I'm also on Twitter, @LateRoundQB. Thanks, everyone. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the Masters and enjoy the first episode of Game of Thrones Season 8.